Hello, I'm your host, Michael Dowden, and here with me today is Sebastian Bergman, creator of PHP Unit. Sebastian, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So PHP has been around now for a little over 30 years, and PHP Unit has been around for most of that. So you have a lot of experience in this industry and in this ecosystem, but what has been holding your attention recently?
What am I currently working on, or what have I started recently to work on, is basically I'm currently tackling issues in PHP Unit, working on features that have been at the back of my mind for quite some time. A little bit of background on how new features get into PHP Unit. New features get into PHP Unit not because somebody, most definitely not me, just wakes up one morning and thinks, oh, I have this idea for some feature that might be useful. Let's just build that.
Right.
That is not how it works. It works by listening to users that use PHP Unit in their daily work to test their software. And either they talk to me directly at a meetup, at a conference, or they send an email, or they open a ticket, or I'm working with them as a consultant or coach. When you use a tool like PHP Unit, there is sometimes friction, right? Where you as a user don't know, am I using it wrong? Could this be better? And most users do not dare open a ticket for an open source project.
Yeah.
And I think that's sad, because for me, the most valuable contribution to an open source project is feedback.
Yeah.
If nobody tells me that something is cumbersome or tedious or not optimal to use, I don't know.
Right.
Because I can only personally notice the friction that I experience myself. And I'm in a privileged position then that I notice the friction and have a really short turnaround time of getting rid of that friction by implementing an improvement. That could be a bug fix, that could be a new feature, that could be improved developer experience. So what I've been hearing for quite some time is, both from individual developers and teams of developers, that they run into situations of flaky tests. And the flaky test is a test that sometimes fails, most of the time works. And the next version of PHP Unit will ship two features that I've worked on for quite some time now to deal with flaky tests going at the problem from two different angles. The two features in question are repeated test execution and execution of tests with a retry. And what do I mean by they go at the problem from different angles? Let me start with repeat. Repeat allows you to tell PHP Unit, for all my tests, repeat every test 10 times, for example, and stop when one of the repetitions fails.
Okay.
So that way you can stress test your test suite.
Nice.
And see and provoke flaky tests. Yeah, the chance of a flaky test failing when you're running it 10 times immediately one after another is a lot higher than repeatedly running your test suite
where each
test runs just once.
Yep.
So this helps identify in a reliable way which tests are flaky. Or if you're lucky, to prove that you do not have any flaky tests. Yeah, you also have to look at the positive case. So what do you do when you identify the flaky test? Well, we have a couple of choices. You can improve the test. You can improve the code that it tests so that the flakiness goes away. In a lot of in some situations that is possible. In others, it is not. For the cases where it's not possible to get rid of the flakiness, maybe you're testing integration with an external service that sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. You can retry an individual test, for example. Like let's say using repeat, you identified that the test is flaky.
Sure.
Now you can add an attribute on this one test saying retry 10 times.
Okay.
Retry works similar to repeat, but it runs the test once, and if it works, if it passes, it's done. It no longer repeats.
Okay.
But you allow how many times it can fail. So for instance, you can say retry a test 10 times, and out of those 10 times, it's allowed to fail 3 times.
Okay.
So that is one solution of dealing with flaky tests.
Sure.
Of course, you're not limited to just putting that attribute onto a single test method or a single test class, but you can just configure for the entire test run, hey, please retry all my tests when they fail and retry them up to 10 times, but each is only allowed to fail 3 out of 10 times. Whatever fits the situation of your particular project.
Nice.
And this has been quite some work. And I'm very happy that I'm finally able to ship this at the beginning of August with PHP Unit 13.3. And I'm not only happy because I'm shipping these two features that finally tackle the flaky test problem, but also because in part this brings back a feature that used to be in PHP Unit already. So for quite some time, there was a repeat CLI option that told PHP Unit to run the tests repeatedly. Okay. But that did not work in some edge cases properly, and it did not work how people actually expected it to work. Even developers and teams that have been using it for quite some time, they did not know how it actually worked. And that caused more and more problems.
Yeah.
So between PHP Unit 9 and PHP Unit 10, a couple of years ago, I decided to remove the functionality, hoping that a lot sooner than it actually happened now, to replace it with something that works. And I'm sorry that it took almost 5 years to bring this feature back. But the good news is that it now actually works the way it's supposed to work, the way that it was always supposed to work, but it didn't. And it's now flanked by the additional feature of the retry to give a complete solution to the flaky test problem.
Sure. That sounds like a huge win for you and for users. Certainly sounds like a challenging feature to build. When you talked a little bit about really wanting and getting that user feedback too, when you're managing a project like this. And I feel like any product or any open source project, that's kind of a big thing that we want to see. And I know that when you're working on a product, even if you're dog fooding it, right? Even if you're using it yourself, you're probably the most familiar person in the world with how it works. So you're the worst, in some cases, the worst person to find the friction points, right? I know I run into that with some of the products I'm working with. So is there definitely true? Yeah.
And it's more true also in another aspect of the project. I more or less jokingly, actually less jokingly, sometimes say I am the worst person to write the documentation for PHP Unit.
Sure.
because I keep forgetting things. Like I just implemented a new feature like repeat or retry, and then I want to document it. And because as long as it's not documented, the feature does not really exist.
Yeah.
So I write the documentation, and it happens so often that I forget something in the documentation, and then weeks or months or sometimes even years later, someone opens a ticket for the documentation. Hey, this is incomplete. I spend a couple of hours trying to figure this out, and there is like this one sentence or this one paragraph missing that links two steps, and right. And then it becomes clear. And I have yet to find a way to solve that problem. Yeah. It's an open source project. I cannot afford to contract right. a technical writer to do this. Ideally, I would tell someone there is a new feature. They look at the feature, they write documentation and interview me, ask me questions, mm-hmm. and I answer the questions. That would probably assure that the documentation is complete earlier.
Yeah.
But for the time being, we have unfortunately to live with the fact that I forget things when I write documentation.
Oh yeah, I absolutely understand that happens. It's so hard to write about the thing that you already know really well.
Yeah, but that's basically two of the easiest ways and two of mm-hmm. the most important ways to contribute to an open source project. Give feedback.
Sure.
Either in person or via email or by opening a ticket or by contributing documentation. For me, that's more valuable than, in a lot of cases, a pull request.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense. So I've been following some of your recent conference presentations and some of the things that you have planned, and it looks like you've been talking about security a lot lately.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you have an upcoming talk about supply chain security in particular.
Yes.
What can you tell us about kind of where your thinking is on that right now?
Mm-hmm. I would never have imagined that I would ever need to become a security expert. And I definitely don't consider myself a security expert. I'm learning more and more there, especially when it comes to supply chain security, which basically means we all need to focus more and give more attention to the code that is part of our applications and solutions that we did not write ourselves.
Sure.
Yeah, we are talking about the PHP ecosystem mm-hmm. and PHP applications. And in our ecosystem, we install dependencies, code that we did not write, but right. reuse from either open source components or closed source commercial libraries that you can also manage and install using Composer. Mm-hmm. We do that using Composer. So we need to be aware that not only every line of code that we write ourselves is a liability and not an asset. Yeah, every line right. of code that I do not have is a line of code that cannot have a security issue or any other type of bug. Every library, framework, whatever I install through Composer is a potential door mm-hmm. through which security vulnerabilities can come. And please don't misunderstand that, as Sebastian says, do not depend on other libraries and frameworks and roll everything yourself and don't install anything using Composer. No, but it's something that is changing, and it's changing for the better, but these changes also cause friction again. Mm-hmm. Right? So with the modern version, with the current version of Composer, you can no longer install a version of a dependency that has a known security vulnerability.
Okay.
At least not by default. Yeah, if you really, really, really want to install something that has a known security vulnerability, you can opt out of that check and install that, but why would you?
Right.
Right? So this is something that teams need to be aware of. And it's also something where I learned a lot about how the machinery for how Composer knows and enforces these rules recently, because a couple of weeks ago, I think by now it's 1 or 2 months ago, I made a release of PHP Unit with a bug fix. With a fix for a bug that had been reported 7, 8, 9 years ago that I never got around to fix. So I released 2 new versions of PHP Unit, one PHP Unit 12 version and one PHP Unit 13 version with a fix for that bug, because those 2 versions currently receive bug fixes.
Sure.
Then less than 24 hours later, I get a security vulnerability reported to me that affects those 2 versions I had released the day before. Remember, I said a couple of minutes ago that I do not consider myself a security expert, and I made a mistake while fixing that bug. So I fixed the bug, but I introduced a security vulnerability along the way. Right. I fixed the security vulnerability, shipped those 2 releases, and did the right thing. I wrote a security advisory and published that.
Mm-hmm.
Since PHP Unit is developed on GitHub, mm-hmm. I can use a service from GitHub to write and publish such a security advisory, and I did. And one of the many things that is asked in the form is, please specify exactly the versions that are affected.
Right.
So I put in the using the right syntax equals 11.x.y and equals 12.x.y. Right. And save that. And the next step in that, before that security advisory is published, somebody at GitHub reviews that and then pushes the button to publish that. And I think that is good, because this needs to be reviewed.
Yeah,
that's fair. Unfortunately, in this case, the person who reviewed the security advisory I drafted thought these version constraints, they look odd. Let's replace equals 11.y.z and equals 12y.z with less than or equals.
No.
And then they published it without asking me whether or not that change would be correct. And then nobody could install any version of PHP Unit through Composer anymore.
Oh, goodness.
And I was notified about this on a Saturday morning via a phone call.
Wow.
And I did not know how to fix that, other than open a ticket with GitHub saying, hey, my security advisory was changed before it was published. Now the PHP unit, the PHP ecosystem cannot install PHP unit anymore. Please fix. In the end, it took about 3 days for GitHub to fix that. But in the meantime, I already figured out, with the help of Niels and Jordi from the Composer and Packages project, on that Saturday, how to work around the issue by publishing an override in another database that is also consumed by Composer to figure out which versions are vulnerable. But that meant, because my Saturday, well, it was not ruined, but I needed to deal with that over the weekend. I also had to ruin somebody else's Saturday, but we managed to fix that or address that within an hour, so then we could enjoy our weekend. But this shows that because there are more and more attacks on the supply chain of an ecosystem like PHP, the tools to install dependencies need to evolve. They need to be strict, more strict than they used to be. And up until and including Composer 2.9, Composer warned about, hey, you just install something that has a security issue. This changed with Composer 2.10. By default, it no longer installs such a version. And this is something that you need to be aware about. I mean, you need, in my opinion, you should have always been aware about your dependencies more than most teams were. But now we are forced to think about this more because the tool now enforces these rules and does not give us the dependencies we need to develop and deploy our software. And if you have a CI/CD pipeline where you automatically run installation of your dependencies and tests and whatever, your pipeline now grinds to a halt when there's a security vulnerability, which I think is good because it clearly shows that this is not something that you can deploy. But it also means being able to deal with such a situation.
A few weeks ago, I was talking with a couple members of the Node.js team, and they mentioned that it's not just production packages that are becoming security vulnerabilities. It's things that you run in your dev environments because they're still inside of the CI/CD pipeline. They're still providing vulnerabilities to your environment. So you're seeing the same thing. I think that
for me, PHP Unit is a development tool. And I now have a very well-defined security policy, what I consider a security issue. Basically, I'm now saying there are no security issues in PHP Unit. The security issues are regular bugs. The argument against that stance that I get is, I run PHP Unit to run tests, and when running those tests exploit something in PHP Unit, then it's your fault. And I would like to say to that, well, if you have a CI/CD pipeline and someone that you do not trust can send you a pull request and you run the code from that pull request in your environment, that by definition is a remote code execution. And whether or not PHP Unit has a part in that is irrelevant.
Yeah, that makes sense. So as you work through some of these supply chain issues, what does good security hygiene look like for a typical PHP project? Like, what are things that you recommend folks do?
There are a couple of things that you can do. So, for example, it's really hard by default and out of the box to write workflows for something like GitHub Actions that are secure. But finally, as of a couple of months ago, there is now a static analysis tool that analyzes your GitHub Actions workflow specifications and tells you, hey, you have a mistake here. And to be honest, the GitHub workflow action pipeline for PHP Unit had close to 20 issues that I just was not aware of. Like, and it was possible to steal Git credentials, was possible to do this, was possible to do that. They are now secure. And it's really easy to fix these issues once you are aware of them and have them pointed out to you by this tool. This tool is called Zismore. It's easy to find if you go search for that. That is one part of it. Now, when it comes to dependencies, update your dependencies often. That sounds trivial and simple and obvious, but a lot of teams still do not do that. And they do not do that because they think it's a process that has to be tedious and manual, but it doesn't have to be. There are services like Renovate or Dependabot that can, or Packages Conductor that can do this automatically for you. These bots, they send you pull requests within minutes when a new version of one of your dependencies has been released.
Nice.
And you can decide whether or not this should be automatically merged when your pipeline works. Yeah. Mm. And that's, and then it depends on how much do you trust your test suite?
Right.
Is your test suite exhaustive enough to, when a dependency is updated and nothing fails, you can trust that you can put it into production? And whether or not you want to automatically merge something like that without looking at the change log for the new version and things like that.
Yeah.
But that can all be configured, especially with regards to, do I want to automatically merge new versions for bug fix and security fix releases? Do I want to do that for versions with new features? You definitely don't want to do this for new major versions that may break backward compatibility, but use something like that at least to learn about a new version of one of your dependencies as soon as possible.
Yeah, right.
And I think that's the most important thing here when it comes to dependency hygiene.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, awareness is always the first step, I think.
Yes. Yes, it is.
It's so easy to be in a situation where you just have no idea what the bugs are, what the security vulnerabilities are in your software. What is the relationship between not just the test suite, but maybe the speed of execution of a test suite and security?
Yeah, that's a topic. That, and there's the concept of awareness again. There's a growing awareness that we, in a lot of situations, can no longer afford that running our tests is really, really slow.
Okay.
Of course, nobody likes a slow test suite, and there are certainly some types of tests have to be slow, and they cannot be made faster, but you probably do not want to have a lot of those tests. But any speed improvement in your test suite helps, and it helps everyone involved. It helps the humans working in the project because they get a fast feedback loop. But it also helps an AI-based agent that also works on the project, because that the agents profit when the test suite is fast. They can work better when it's fast. And although they are machines and not humans, they also sometimes get bored and lose their focus when, I run the tests. And then 2 minutes later, tests are still running. So far, nothing has failed. I'll kill the test execution and move on to the next thing, because obviously this is not. And you need to be very careful with setting up the guardrails for your project that you do not run into a situation like that. Yeah. But the most important reason is, due to the fact that we have now AI models like Mythos from Anthropic and similar security-focused models, we are seeing an onslaught of security vulnerabilities that are reported. Not only I'm talking about the PHP ecosystem here, but the same is true for all ecosystems out there and for all open source projects.
Sure.
But I have a little bit more insight into PHP and the ecosystem around it. And there are record numbers of security vulnerabilities being reported for PHP itself and commonly used libraries and frameworks and tools. Anything that helps you verifying a potential fix for mm-hmm. something like that is good.
Sure.
Like if, and that is of course not only related to security, but to any work that you did, that you do in a project, the faster the feedback loop, the better. Mm-hmm. If you can improve the performance of that, great.
Mm-hmm.
And the more security vulnerabilities that are reported, the more security vulnerabilities you need to inspect, and sure. you need to write tests for that, and you need to run all the existing tests for every step along the way. The less time that takes, the better.
Sure. So you mentioned that you're getting a lot more security reports. Is this that the discovery of security vulnerabilities is getting faster, the reporting is getting more comprehensive, or are you also seeing a bunch of false reports coming through?
All of the above.
Okay.
Including duplicates.
Oh,
so for example, okay. there was recently a security vulnerability reported for PHP itself
mm-hmm.
that turned out to be not a security vulnerability after someone who actually knows what they are doing and not doing some prompting in the LLM of their choice. So it turned out to be not a security vulnerability, but it was reported by 10 different reporters. And the 10 reports all looked different. So at first glance, this looks like, oh, we have 10 new issues in that area of the code base. So people start investigating them. And only along the way, after investigating like 5 or 6 of these reports, they realize, oh, it's all the same and it's all false.
Wow.
And that takes a lot of time.
Of course it does.
So, yes, we get false reports, but not as many as about a year ago, maybe,
okay.
because the models have gotten better. And especially with Mythos, it's that you get a comprehensive and using additional tooling around that, like Scrutineer, which is something that is built by Alpha Omega. You get actionable reports, including a reproducer. So that also helps cutting down the time it takes for a human to make the final decision. Yes, this is an issue. No, this is not an issue. And this is how we will fix it. But basically all of the above. And I assume that this onslaught will continue for the next 1 or 2 years. And after that, my hope is that we will have a lot more secure software than we have today. But I would also assume that a lot of projects will disappear over this.
Sure.
Because they cannot keep up with that. They cannot fix all these issues. They cannot research all these issues. And sooner or later, these issues will become known because everyone can prompt an LLM and eventually more people will get access to more powerful models. Yeah, it's no longer the domain of very few highly skilled security experts that can find a vulnerability, write an exploit,
sure.
do the research, and then either publish a vulnerability report to the project and communicate that to get it fixed, or make a profit by illegally exploiting that in the wild. More and more people will get access to this kind of information. Yeah. And projects that cannot keep up with fixing these issues will go under.
Which is hard for the community, but also in some ways also necessary because of the state of security.
We, as in the PHP Foundation, are trying to help the PHP ecosystem as best mm-hmm. as we can. We now have an AI security engineer in residence. I hope nice. I got that title right. It's not something that we came up with, but that was suggested to us.
Sure.
Volker Dusch, who is currently working for 6 months full time for the PHP Foundation to help libraries and frameworks in the PHP ecosystem deal with these reports.
Okay.
because let's face it, a lot of these projects have never had a security advisory to write, to publish, to deal with the consequences of that. And it starts really simple with explaining things like, okay, somebody reported a vulnerability to you. How do you verify that? Please don't just run the reproducer on your machine. Create an environment that is isolated, where it's safe to reproduce that. And where do you go from there?
Right.
So that's something that we're currently working on to give the official / canonical / whatever you want to call it, guidelines for dealing with security vulnerabilities in the PHP ecosystem to make it easy and approachable as possible to educate maintainers about these things.
Sure. It's software's gotten to the point that there's so many things that we need to know, especially if you're independently running a open source project. You need to understand accessibility, you need to understand security, you need to get these things right, or there's a problem, like you said, in the entire supply chain. And it's hard. A lot of these projects started because somebody had a need and saw it and solved it for themselves, released it to other people, and then it took off.
Yeah, I did not imagine a little bit over 26 years ago by now when I started to work on PHP Unit because I had an itch to scratch. I had a problem that I was experiencing that was painful for me, not being able to test the software that I was writing in PHP. I did not imagine back then that first of all, other people would start using this. And now I'm getting close to 1 billion downloads.
Wow.
Right. So, that I would still be doing this 26 years later. And I learned a lot along the way about maintenance and responsibility.
Sure.
And I never imagined that. But most of the time, I'm still enjoying that.
Well, that's good. So how has the introduction of AI into development processes and coding and pipelines changed the way you work or changed the product that you're providing to the community?
So I'm taking off the hat of the PHP Unit maintainer and the PHP open source project now and put on the hat of the consultant, coach, and trainer who has been telling developers and teams for over 20 years, write tests, do this, do that, write architecture decision records, build clean software. And I was met with so much resistance over the years. We do not have time for that. Nobody pays for that. We understand that this might be the right thing to do, but we do not need it or we do not want it. So for a lot of different reasons, a lot of people were not doing it. And suddenly they are scrambling to introduce these tools and techniques and practices into their daily work. Because they realize that without these guardrails, using an agent to accelerate development is reckless. And I have to be as blunt as that. And part of me finds that frustrating and sad that it takes this for people to finally do that. Then again, I think doing the right thing for the wrong reason is still the right thing. But to me, software development is more about human-human interaction than human-machine interaction, even in this age of AI-assisted development.
Sure, totally agree.
And all these tools and techniques and practices would have helped and still help the humans in the project. And we could have done that for 20 plus years.
Yes,
correct. And the teams that have been doing that, there are few of them, but there are teams that have been doing that. they are the ones that thrive right now because they can really accelerate their development because they have a test harness and guardrails that they can trust, and they stay in control because they write the specification or they write the tests, depending on whether you do spec-driven development or test-driven development, and the machine writes the code. And if you use none of these tools that I just mentioned, then you're just producing code faster. But from my experience, if you do that, you just go faster into the wrong direction and accumulate technical debt faster than ever before. And that is certainly not desirable.
No, it is not.
Yeah, so I think the human needs to stay in control. And I can also only encourage everyone who does use AI assistance in software development to sometimes don't use it. And this is a very fresh experience that I can share from last week. Last week, I was at a conference where I gave a full day training on AI-assisted software development. And in the AM, for the first 2 hours, I forced the attendees to work without an AI agent. I gave them an assignment. I asked them to implement a specific thing test-driven. And then over lunch, one of the attendees told me, "Sebastian, I'm shocked. I'm doing PHP for 25 plus years, and for the last 6 months, basically since December, I have not written a single line of code myself. I'm only using an AI agent and just review what the AI agent is producing, the tests and the code and everything. And this morning, you forced me to write code by hand, and I did that, and I realized that I forgot so many things."
Sure.
So over the last couple of months, I read a lot of articles about the phenomenon called de-skilling.
Yeah.
And this does not only apply to IT professionals and software developers. This applies to all professions and disciplines where there is an increased use of AI. One example I read was from oncologists that within a year forgot or unlearned how to interpret x-rays and MRIs to detect cancer because they rely on AI to do that for them now. And that is something that genuinely scares me. And I think we need to tackle the education problem there. On the one hand, educating new developers so that they understand the foundations and the fundamentals so that they can stay on equal footing with the AI agent and detect when what the AI agent does is not the right thing, but also to senior developers that they do not unlearn what they already know.
Absolutely.
Because we need to stay in control, and that means we need the skills, we need the expertise to judge what the AI is doing. At least that is my opinion.
Oh, I agree. If we de-skill too much, you lose the ability to effectively audit or review what the AI is doing. You're effectively pulling the human out of the loop. Even if there's a technically a person there, you've gone from becoming a skilled reviewer or expert to a button pusher. And that's not really the goal of the pattern.
Yes.
I think that's a great great evaluation. I agree with everything you said. And I think it's interesting that the conversations that I'm having with folks are increasingly going in a similar direction. It's that we need to focus on building the right thing. We need to focus on the human to human interaction at the end of the day and making sure that we maintain skills and stay in control of what's happening. It's all good, very good lessons.
And in case we need one more reason to not de-skill, what if the agents are gone?
Sure.
Prices can only go up.
Yeah.
And all the big cloud-based, LLM-based agent solutions are US-based.
Yeah.
Doesn't really matter where they are based, but it's big corporations, and whether it's for corporation goals or government agenda at the push of a button, mm-hmm. we can lose access to that. Mm-hmm. And if we no longer do know how to build software ourselves, what do we do then?
Right. I can see that being a bit of an issue. So keeping your consultant's hat on, what are some things that you see have been milestones over the past few years in changes in development or in the ecosystem? Or do you feel like things have been, you're still teaching the same lessons today that you were 20 years ago?
At the core of it, it's probably the same topics, but in different contexts and in different ways, probably. Yeah. Fundamentals are still important.
Sure.
And yeah, I don't really have a good answer to that.
That's fair. I mean, and you talked a little bit about the things that you've been talking about for a long number of years are now super important. And this is also a conversation I've been having where the things that we've been advocating for, especially those of us spend a lot of time speaking with other developers, we're advocating for developer experience. We're advocating for things to make our lives easier as developers. And we're getting them now, but not for ourselves, for the agents. And on the one hand, like you said, it's great that we're getting it now. But on the other hand, it would have been nice 10 years ago.
Definitely.
What do you see as the future over the next, I don't know, couple of years? Any major changes that you see on the horizon? Or is that kind of the time frame that you see things finally balancing out a little bit with the influx of agent pull requests and agent-led security and those sorts of things?
I'm not really good at looking into the future. I'm almost certain about the thing that I already said earlier, that with the influx of those security vulnerability reports, etc., that will be a painful journey over the next 1 or 2 years. I don't think that this will go on forever, because there is the term again, this will also cause friction, and developers are really good at getting rid of friction, and they will figure out the tried and true best practices for dealing with that. And that means more automation, more tooling, more guardrails to prevent security issues that were now reported and then fixed to not come again in the future. So there is the immediate impact of something like that, but also the long-term impact of improving the security posture of a project, whether that is open source or closed source. So at some point, I hope this crisis of increased security vulnerabilities might be over, but beyond that, I don't know.
What do you see as the impact to the ecosystem, or put another way, what is the sustainability of the open source ecosystem when we see some projects shut down, perhaps as a result of this influx of security issues?
Well, in general, I fear that if we do not finally really figure out how to fund open source development, that open source will die. Mm-hmm. And that really hurts to say, but it's just not sustainable the way that it is right now.
Right.
And I think part of the reason why there is not more funding for open source is that the funding that currently happens, for the most part, comes out of the marketing budget of a company.
Yeah,
at least that's the experience that I have with companies that sponsor development of PHP Unit. It comes out of the marketing budget. Mm-hmm. It's employer branding. It's getting a company's logo onto the PHP Unit website so they can signal, hey, we do something for the ecosystem. Right. Come work for us. We are a nice company. And there's nothing wrong with that. I do think, however, that investing in maintenance of the dependencies that you use to operate your business should not come out of the marketing budget, but out of the IT budget.
Sure.
And it's not a nice to have. It is essential.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of people say now, yeah, we do not need open source and dependencies anyway, because my AI agent can build me all the functionality of all those dependencies. And then what? You maintain it, your agent maintains it.
Right.
How do you know that it really works? I mean, that's the benefit of sharing the common infrastructure.
Right.
And from the technical perspective, we as in the open source community and IT as a whole have proven over the last, depending on how you want to call and where you want to start, last 30 to 40 years, that it makes a lot of sense to have common infrastructure that everyone can use to build their solution on. It would be ridiculous if everyone built their own operating system and web server and programming language and testing framework and whatever.
And they would all be terrible.
And they would all be terrible. Yes. So now we just in air quotes, need to figure out how to make sure that everyone pays their fair share for this.
Absolutely.
So the open source developers don't burn out and stop doing what they are doing and instead do something with wood or gardening or whatever.
I would venture to guess that if every tech company contributed to open source projects based upon the economic value they got out of those projects, then open source developers would be the most highly compensated developers on the planet. And that's often not the case, which is unfortunate, because there's a tremendous amount of value being loaned.
There is an initiative called Open Source Pledge. They did some calculations, and their recommendation is that a company should give $1,000 or euros per developer per year to open source to the projects that they depend on.
That makes sense.
And don't get, just to be clear, I do not want to get rich from doing open source work, but doing open source work does not put a roof over my head or food on my table.
Right.
I need to justify against myself that I put in thousands of hours over the years into doing this. And of course, in the beginning, I did this to scratch an itch, and I still have that itch. But I did not imagine that so many people, depending on how you count, somewhere between 1 and 2 million developers worldwide, depending on my testing framework to work correctly. And I feel that responsibility every time I publish a new release, because I know within minutes it will be installed already a couple of hundred times. And if I messed up, somebody will have a miserable day. And it is time and effort that goes into that. And it's time in which I cannot do other work for my customers to get a direct income from that. So we need, as a society, to figure out how to properly compensate that.
I totally agree. Sebastian, this has been a fantastic conversation. I really thank you for your time. Is there one final takeaway that you'd like to leave everyone with?
Those are usually the toughest questions. In these times of security vulnerabilities, take the time to reflect in your project and in your team how you deal with your dependencies. Do you have a process for updating your dependencies? If you do not have a process at all yet, start having one. It can be manual in the beginning. If you already have a process and it's manual, start thinking about automating it now. You need to minimize the time between a security vulnerability becomes known for something you depend on and the appropriate fix is released to you having that fixed.
Excellent advice. Well, thank you again so much. It's been great having you here. Appreciate the conversation.
Thanks for having me again.
All right. And to the rest of you, take care. Enjoy coding.